criminal justice system. During a speech to the American Bar Association in San Francisco, Holder said federal prisons are operating at almost 40% above capacity to cope with a prison population that's grown by nearly 800% since 1980. And almost half of those are in jail for drug-related crimes.
Widespread incarceration at the federal, state, and local levels is both ineffective and unsustainable. It imposes a significant economic burden, totaling $80 billion in 2010 alone. And it comes with human and moral costs that are impossible to calculate. As a nation, we are coldly efficient in our incarceration efforts.
The Attorney General said it is well past time to implement common sense changes.
Some issues are best handled at the state or local level. And that's why I have directed today the United States Attorney community to develop specific, locally tailored guidelines.
Introduce a catheter, siphon up your life. Talk radio, I love you. You're both through the day. You're a hideous reminder.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Are you sure this gonna work, Miss Harry?
It's our only chance to gain freedoms.
I sure hope so. I'm tired of all this unpaid, highly skilled labor that I put forth. Just to our future children can have no benefits. You still have to deal with racial inequality. 162 years later, Miss Harry,
make sure you catches it all.
That's why. That's why you're here, Miss Harry. I ain't gonna leave you hanging.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Waiting water. Waiting water. Oh, shit, they coming.
Harriet, I've never seen you be this frisky before.
Oh, massa. All these years I've been acting like I didn't love our special time together. Tonight, that's all gonna be different.
This ought to be fun for both of us, as long as Mary don't find out.
Oh, I was never gonna tell.
Harriet, drop it like a hot coal.
Yeah, you like that?
Oh, good. Yeah, man.
Harry, you know I love you.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours?
And how did he kill? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. White man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Those who like knowledge, man, like myself, in the name of Allah, man, you find out who's the true and living man, and you really get the truth. That's how I'm gonna put it to you, man. Truth and all things in existence, man. You know what I mean? That's what you want to do. In the name of Allah, and Allah means arm, leg, leg, arm, head, man, forming a physical body. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is, man. So don't get twisted, don't get scared, don't get caught up in the 9/11 terrorist bombing shit and all of that, man. Understand? True living, man, in the name of Allah. Study your lessons.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
Internet radio for smarter than original.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian. Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from. Yeah, and at this point, let me hip everybody to an address change. We were aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com. We are now aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com. We're sorry about that, but we had email problems, and that was login problems, and we were right in the middle of redesign, and the person who was doing redesign didn't understand everything else that was going on, so this is what happened. Yeah, the RSS feed is the same, you know, all of that is the same, but the address is now aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com, which should be a lot easier for folks to remember. We are also at aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com, which is the main page. So, as usual, thank you for tuning in to Indigenous News, Thought and Analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neo-classist, neo-colonialist, neoliberal, neo-fascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. As always, I wish peace to the gods and earths and love and solidarity to the entire original family in this time of strife and struggle. I'm your host, Angry Indian. I'm here as always, and I almost wasn't today, actually. Somebody got held up with our executive producer and engineer, Guadalupe Morales. It's been a really funky day. It's been a really funky week, man. You know, it's like, what the hell is going on here with the coonery? With the coonery. Yeah, I mean, some of you already know what I'm going to say. You know, Russell Simmons, I don't know, man. I mean, if you hear about this, man, you probably will. I don't know, man. You know, what the hell was going through your mind, man? You know, I don't want to dish you and ask you what you were smoking or what you were drinking, because you can't do all of that editing and production work without being sober. So you made a conscious decision as the head of your production thing, as the head of your new network, right? This is your new thing. This is the world of hip hop, ladies and gentlemen, right? You know, this is what you do when you come out of the gate. You take a, you know, a national black hero. The hell with, you know, the whole thing about, well, you know, this is an American. No. This is an African hero that belongs to the new African Republic. However you want to define that. I'm talking about the African diaspora. My nation. One of my nations, right? Well, really, the only nation that will claim me. And that's only because of the one drop rule, really. But that's another discussion for another time. I mean, you know, Harriet Tubman did more damage to the white South as a female in terms of upsetting their system, basically because she was stealing their property away to be free as their creator intended them to be, however you wish to define that. However you wish to define it, you know, I'm not putting any labels on it, and I'm not putting any yeast on it. Liz, you know, Harriet Tubman was a freedom fighter. She was a revolutionary. See, she actually did what all of you RGB gotta have the up-to-date camouflage, right? You know, all of you, you know, you got your big Africa on your chest, you know, you got your face tattooed up, right? You know, all of you cats, you talk all of this, and that's all you're doing is posturing. You're posturing. You're no different than the thugs, you know, we see in all of the thuggery that we see going on here across the entire African world, man. You know, how many of you revolutionaries? I know I'm going on a tangent. How many of you revolutionaries are even looking at Egypt? And I'm not a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood. If you know anything at all about the Muslim Brotherhood in terms of, you know, what they want, I'm not talking about how, you know, all the stuff in between. I'm talking about their goals. You know, same thing with what you see with the Palestine situation with Hamas. The majority of people are not particularly favorable of Hamas. When you look at the Muslim Brotherhood, you look at Hamas. I mean, that's the whole reason Israel created Hamas in the first goddamn place. Because the PLO was mostly Christian and secular and left-wing, right? Some outright communists. Depending on, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I know Abbas is trying to erase all of that history. And he's looking at capitalism and, you know, the Palestinian Authority, whatever. You know, nobody really voted for him in the beginning. Nobody voted for him in the end. It is what it is. But the point is, they, you know, the Israeli intelligence, Israeli government, they create Hamas to have a, you know, conservative, you know, counterbalance to the left-wing PLO. Let's get everybody confused and screwed up. Right? The PLO, you choose whatever religion you want to be bothered with, right? Or you can choose no religion. Right? Do any research on the Palestine Liberation Organization. And I'm not talking about all of the nuttiness that they were involved in. I'm talking about their actual, you know, their actual political breakdown. A political deconstruction of the PLO. Not Yasser Arafat as a personality. And that's another discussion that we could have. What the hell happened with that? What's going on in France? What the hell happened with that? That's another discussion we can have, right? But the thing is, they created this, you know, ultra-conservative religious, organization to counterbalance the left wing. Because, you know, they would rather, if they had to deal, not deal with them, right? Or just no way. This can't. You know, even though the entire, you know, Zionist movement, you know, as conservative as it is based on, you know, leftist principle, you know, which is a mindfuck in and of itself. But, you know, when you look at what the hell is going on in Egypt, you know, and all of you supposed revolutionaries, all of you loudmouths, you're not even connecting what the hell is really going on with that. What is really happening is they're destabilizing the continent for a reason. So Mubarak drops out, and then supposedly they allow the MB to come in. And then we see they try to impose their nonsense, right? Right? Morsi tried to impose his nonsense. He tried to get, be heavy-handed from the beginning, face some opposition, and then here comes the military. So now, because of all of the chaos, the average person in the street now, they want the military. Because it seems like there's a sense of order to it. It seems like it puts things into some kind of perspective so that we can straighten things out. And people were cheering the military. What's going on now? And like I said, I do not like anything dealing with goddamn religion, and I do not like conservatives. But they were told to go to the ballot box, right? They were told to become political. They were told to move away from violence and to come and to go to the ballot box. This is the same spiel that was told to Hamas. This is the same thing that was told to Hezbollah, right? And they did this, and it got political. Now we understand that Hezbollah, which is a political party, which is like, what, part of the government of Lebanon. The European Union has decided now that they're terrorists. Now, this is coming off the back of the MEK being delisted from the terrorist watch list. The MEK, well, they have a problem in Iran, so, you know, they've now made some sort of a deal, even though they have been antagonistic to U.S. interests for as long as they've been in existence. So figure that one out. You have Joan Chesimard over here, otherwise known as the Shah of Shakur, who's just been the only woman, who's just been added to the FBI terrorist watch list. Even though she wasn't involved in terrorism, her case was a case of police brutality in, what was it, Lupe? State of New Jersey, right? Yeah. And this was decades ago. And they doubled the bounty on her. You know, I mean, what the hell is this? But you take the mech off the terror watch list. That doesn't make any sense. See, in a logical, sane world, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that John Kerouac, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, is sitting in the joint, even though he didn't torture anybody, for exposing the fact that torture is taking place in violation of international law, in violation of U.S. law, of constitutional law, of the rules of war, against the military code of conduct, against the charter of the damn intelligence agencies that are in the middle of doing this. But, you know, he's in the joint, right? The fellow, what was he, a broker? I don't know if he's a broker. He was on Democracy Now! Two, if not three times. He went to the joint. You know, talking about these offshore accounts and how they're basically ripping off taxpayers. How the hell does this work out? How the hell does this work out? Now, what does any of this have to do with what I was talking about with Russell Simmons and Harriet Tubman? Well, it doesn't seem like on the face of it that it has any connection. But yes, it's connected. You know, it's connected in the sense of the types of confusion that I'm talking about that allows these types of judgments to be made. All right, now here's somebody who was no dummy. Multimillionaire. And obviously he can manage that, but he can't look at this script when it was brought to him, this concept, and say, this is out of line. And even if I think that there's something to it, there's no way the average person in the community is going to roll with this. I mean, was this supposed to be some super intellectual, you know, bougie black thing that I don't follow? I mean, because, yes, I understood it, but the context... Well, I mean, I understood the context of everything. I understand the underlying supposed quasi-joke, if you want to get it. And maybe that's the Tom in me, the fact that I actually understand it. But see, the bottom line is, though, what the fuck is this, man? You know, Harriet Tubman, you would never find any white hero portrayed in this manner. Ever. And the Asian community, for example, would never allow anybody to be, or at least the Chinese community, I can't speak for the Philippine community, but with the Chinese community, I know politically, they would not allow their heroes to be portrayed in a demeaning manner. It's just not going to happen. And if it is happening in Asian cinema now, if it is happening in Asian media now, and state propaganda and what happened now, it's because they've learned their lesson. And you have to understand, everything that happens in the U.S. happens elsewhere. You know, if you think the surveillance here is bad and in the U.K. is bad, well, hey, Africa... They're begging for this equipment now. And what do you think they're going to do? But spy on all of their opposition. Use further brutality against all their opposition. They're already African leaders are saying, well, the U.S. is doing torture. They do torture in the U.S., so why can't we? This is how they're defending themselves. This is how they're justifying what they're doing. And this is on top of the evangelical movement over there telling them to go after their traditional people who practice Vodun and the other pagan beliefs and their homosexual folks. You know, it's like, well, what the hell is this? You know, we're told about post-colonial, but how the hell is this post-colonial? If in, you know, 2013, Russell Simmons, of all goddamn people, can come up with a new concept of media, because, you know, black people need more media, right? We need more media, because there's not enough goddamn media out there as it is. We need more. So, you know, here's another video. We need more of it, right? And he starts off out of the gate from the jump with a supposed parody. It was basically not just this is Harriet Tubman, but this is every African in the world. And then he offered an apology, and I was going to read it, and then I was like, for what? You know, it was weak, and it was no, it had no more strength in it than Rick Ross's bullshit apology. And like I said, and I'm going to say it again, if you buy Rick Ross's damn music after what he talked about, you a sucker, man. You're a sucker, man. Same thing with Jay-Z. If you're going to buy his nonsense after what he basically has been going around saying, you're a sucker. So don't tell me no more about your goddamn hip-hop universe. You're a sucker if you continue to give them your money, if you continue to give them any of your time and interest. Why? And I'm about to say the same thing about Russell Simmons. And I'm adding Don Lemon into this goddamn list too. I mean, it's one thing when, you know, you can have an opinion, what have you. I understand that. But we're talking about a time of crisis here. And instead of actually trying to deal with problems, we got people like Russell Simmons out here who basically just coon for everybody and coon the entire goddamn community. You know, I mean, if you really don't, well, actually, I know some of you don't, because you don't know any white people socially. I mean, you work with a few, maybe you got drunk, you got high with some, right? You might go to bed every now and again, you know, you might cross that barrier, right? But you don't really, you know, you're not in as deep as I am, say, right? To the point where you're in the hospitals with these people. You dig what I'm saying? You're at funerals. You know, you're involved in family problems and issues. You know, like you're one of the people they call on when they need your ass, right? When things get bad. You know, you want to call it timing, you want to call it assimilation, you call it what you want. But that's the perspective in which I'm coming from right now with my analysis. And I'm telling you, as somebody who has sat on the sofa of white folks, right, visiting with another white family, and some coon shit popped on, and they start talking about those people. And then they always, you know, try to qualify with, well, not you, present company excluded. But I was at the Walmart yesterday, and I saw this, right? Or I got a sister who lives in wherever, and she told me this. And, you know, that just becomes the new me. So now, Harriet Tubman, she didn't, you know, walk around with pistols, right? She didn't walk around with straight razors. You know, she didn't get into physical fights and so on with white folks. And, you know, I'm going to say Uncle Tom, but that's not really what I mean. What I really mean is to say is traitor. You know, the type of people who knew what the hell she was doing and were working against her. You know, so some of those folks, you know, got laid down. You dig what I'm saying? So, you know, because this is what was happening. She was trying to free a people. But now that's been reduced to, she wasn't, you know, this soldier. Now she was just giving it up. She gave up, you know, some ass, right, to the white slave man and made him a deal. And that's how she got people free. And that is how young black folks are going to understand it. And that's how they're going to relay it. And then there's going to be a white person that's going to say, well, it's true. Russell Simmons did a video. Why would he have done it if it wasn't true? Man, he already called all kinds of hell for that. They kicked his ass up around his shoulders. Oh, no, but see, his community came down on him for telling the truth. See, for those of you who don't really know white folks, you think this is going to fly over. No, it's not. This is going to stick in their mind, right? This is going to stick in the racist white man's mind, right? Plato mind. It's never going to go away. It is always going to goddamn be there. They will reference this. This will be stuck in their permanent Rolodex forever. You know, Don Lemon statements, right? Supporting Bill O'Reilly, right? Cal Penn yesterday is okay with racial profiling as long as it's not him, right? As long as it's not Desi people. Is that what it is? Is that what it is? You know, I mean, the coonery is goddamn astounding. You know, right after the Trayvon Martin tragedy and right after the Zimmerman verdict, because what else can anyone call it? The Zimmerman verdict. He's hanging out with Steven Seagal now. I mean, it's like, this has become a fucking circus. This entire country has become a fucking circus. It's a fucking freak show. And what really bothers me is that it's not bothering anybody. You know, and instead of trying to figure a way out of this, Russell Simmons is figuring out a way to work us into it. We can all have a chuckle, we can all laugh, find something funny about this, because, you know, there was something funny about slavery, right? You know, and one person already today has brought up, he was bringing up Jacob the Liar, which is really ridiculous, because that was a remake of Life is Beautiful, the Benigni film, and... He was trying to say, well, hey, you know, the Tubman thing is no different than that film. I said, there's a big goddamn difference. There wasn't anything funny about a concentration camp. This was a story about his father who was trying to lighten the situation for his son. It was a father's love for his son to try to save him the mental, you know, damage of what the hell they were suffering through. Because if you've ever read any of the narratives of the Holocaust camp survivors, be they death camps or work camps, and you think anything is funny, you know, you're a real sick son of a bitch. You know, and I know you Nazis that listen to this show, you know, so you can see what the hell is going on over here. You know, you think that's funny. No, you're a bunch of sick sons of bitches, man. You're sick. You're sick. If you think anything in those camps are goddamn funny, or you can be like me and actually shut your fucking mouth and sit down with a goddamn survivor and let them talk and don't fucking interrupt and see if you think it's funny, you know, and they'll tell you, you know, how people became animalistic. Because I know, you know, it's always good to, you know, to talk about how niggas and Indians just don't know how to handle society, and when you put them in prisons, you know, prison camps or what have you, put them in isolated and confined conditions, you know, look at them, they just devolve. Like, you know, humans don't do that, you know. Humans don't do that. You know, it's always the darker people and the indigenous, you know, but humans don't do that. I've known, you know, camp survivors, and they're like, hey, man, you know, the only people that got out were those that were willing to steal, willing to hurt people. You know, the thugs are the ones that survived the camps. You know, this is what survivors have told me. And if that's not enough for you, if you actually can find it, because this is really hard to goddamn find, Who Shall Live and Who Shall Die is a documentary. Go look for it if you can find it. I used to have a copy, and I don't know, loaned it to somebody, never saw it again. If you really think that there's such a thing as Jewish unity and Zionism is just you know, universally accepted by everybody, no, you're wrong. Watch that and see what the hell was really going on with that track. Watch that. Another one, Genocide, came out, 1982 maybe, narrated by Orson Welles and Elizabeth Taylor, when they talked about 4 million. And I'm not going to get into a debate about that, because, you know, you revisionists like David Irving make me fucking sick. But, you know, whatever the number was, it was goddamn horrible and disgusting, and you know, anybody who thinks any of that is goddamn, you know, funny is sick. So same thing with this Harriet Tubman thing. I know there were people chuckling at that, because I heard some, but these are also the same kind of people that will laugh at a goddamn plane accident. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you got a lot of fucking numbskulls out here. But no, Simmons, man, it was a bad look, it was a bad goddamn move, and I'm sorry, but I have to add you now to the list of elite Negroes who have completely lost their minds. I'm sorry. You know, you, Oprah Winfrey, Jay-Z, right? Rick Ross, you know, and Don Lemon, and evidently the list is going to continue to grow because, you know, as bad as things are, when we need to show some kind of fucking maturity, some political maturity, some socio-political goddamn maturity, you know, fuck all they come together. You know, we've been saying that. We need to show some goddamn maturity as a fucking community and stop complaining about, well, they got this and these other groups got that. Well, that's true. But, you know, at the same goddamn time, you know what the hell is working against you. So why don't you stop acting like a fucking clown and fucking get to work? You know, it's like, you know, we're good for telling other people what the fuck to do. But, you know, obviously we can't get our goddamn shit together. Now, and again, we all know COINTELPRO is still out there. It probably still working, right? We already know they don't want us to get any goddamn where. We already know that they're still performing medical experiments on African and Native people. We know this. So why are we sitting around worried about what the fuck Jay-Z and Beyonce are doing? They ain't worried about you. Oprah, she's worried about why she can't go to Switzerland and fucking, you know, be able to ask for an alligator purse and what have you, right? Which is already questionable. You know, it's already suspect to goddamn begin with. You know we play PETA fucking PSAs on this show. And, you know, I don't agree 100% with PETA. I don't agree 100% with anybody. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, hey, you know, you want the black community to get mad for you because you went to buy an alligator purse? And they didn't, you know, kiss your ass, right? So, you know, we're supposed to get mad with you about that? And we're supposed to go see the butler? Right? You know, I mean, who was it? Lee Daniels, the director? You know, talking about the butler is a movement? If that, what? See, this is what the hell I'm talking about. How is it we have black heroes that I can really talk about? Like Robert K. Williams. No, let's not talk about him, right? Deacons for the Fence. Let's not talk about him going to Tanzania, going to China, right? Let's not talk about him, Cuba, right? Let's not talk about that. And no, that film Panther was a nothing. You know, and again, you know, I'm sorry. You know, it's not a diss to the director, but he's not his dad. You dig what I'm saying? It is what it is. It is what it is. I mean, he was in the Hebrew Hammer. I understand he's not serious. You know, I get that. But, you know, at what point do you get... At what point do you fucking get serious, though? You know, I mean, the only reason we know about Trayvon Martin and so on is because he was, you know, not one of the bad ones, really. And he was in a white neighborhood. And, you know, since I haven't seen anything, I told you, I'm speculating on this. But, hey, I believe that the woman that his father is involved with was white. So, you know, there was a lot of reason why there was, you know, a lot of focus on that particular case. But, you know, there's a whole lot of brothers out here being hurt all the goddamn time, and sisters for that matter, and nobody talks about that. You know, well, actually, you have to go to the Manchester Guardian in the UK to find out about black women being hurt in the United States. And isn't that a motherfucking shame? How do you feel about that, Black America? How do you feel about that, BET? Are you ashamed? Are you ashamed? You should be. If you're not, you fucking should be. You fucking should be. That's a goddamn shame that you have to read foreign press, you know, that you have to go to Press TV, the Iranian state news media, to find out about what's happening about racism in the United States towards Africans and colonialism as it applies to Native Americans. I mean, Press TV in Iran and Al Jazeera in Qatar do more about Native American issues in the United States than media in the United States. And when was the last time you heard Leonard Peltier's name mentioned in a mainstream newspaper anywhere in the United States at any time? Objectively. You know, so that's what it is for media. And, you know, Russell Simmons, man, I mean, I don't know what, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to say, man. You know, it's like, what can be said? Yeah, okay, yeah, you went ahead and apologized, but man, brother, what was you thinking about when you made that move in the first place? Really? Really? You know, and then now on top of this, what is it? Jesse Jackson Jr., he just went into the joint, right? And now Cory Booker, he's more than likely going to the Senate and more than likely going to run for president, but look at all the Republicans that have been backing him and all of the corporate money that he's been getting since the get-go. But no. Wiz Khalifa. He's going to have something coming out soon. Maybe Amber Rose is on it. That's what we all should be fucking concerned about, right? Yeah, you know. I know you love entertainment. You love to have a good time. And you're going to entertain and jig yourself right into motherfucking genocide. But hey, that's what some of you want. That's what some of you want. So we're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves. And when we come back, we're going to have a special interview with Mike Cadell. He is the executive producer of Roger Free Kansas, where you can hear this show on their Friday morning slot. So, you know, pour something if you have any. Light whatever it is you like to use if you do that. And stick around. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You know, a long time ago down in Mississippi, when it was slavery time, they called us niggas, you know. I didn't give a damn how light and bright you was a nigger. Right on. So this nigger was working for this white man. The white man said, nigger, say, you know, you've been working for me a long time. He said, yes, sir, boss. He said, and I hear all you niggas running right here in Mississippi talking about the niggas don't ever get no break. Said, but today, say, I'm going to give you niggas a break. Said, nigger, I'm going to put you on TV. And I want you to tell the world how we treat the colored folks down here in Mississippi. Nigga said, boss, you sure you want me to tell them? Say, hell yeah, nigga. Say, I'm going to dress you up. Honey, buy a brand new pair of overalls. Yeah. You know, the kind with the strap on the shoulder. The one strap across the shoulder. I dressed this nigga up and took him down TV station. Say, all right, nigga. Say, you're on the air. Say, you hooked up nationwide. Nigga was scared to go on. Say, boss, you sure it's all right? Say, hell yeah, nigga, go on. Tell them what we do, how we treat you colored folks down here in Mississippi. Boss, you sure you want me to tell them? Yeah, nigga, tell them. Speak up, speak up. Nigga say, help!
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
And effective today, nearly two-thirds of staff at WBAI-FM, one of the five Pacifica Radio Network stations, are laid off, including the entire news team. According to Pacifica's interim director, Summer Reese, who announced the layoffs, the move comes as the station is no longer able to meet payroll and transmitter payments. In signing off the airwaves Friday, WBAI News Editor Andrea Sears addressed the audience.
I am in many ways incredulous that the entire news department has been taken off the air. News and information from a perspective that is outside the mainstream, a critical perspective that puts the needs of people first and holds on to the ideals that are best paid lip service by those with money and power. Journalism that speaks truth to power, that to me is the heart and soul of WBAI. And where better to practice that craft than here in New York City, the media capital of the world.
WBAI will continue to broadcast terrestrial and online radio, but will distribute low or no-cost content. For FSRN, from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice. End HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination. Get information from your community health center or nursing station, or visit www.caan.ca.
Este es Radio Insurgente, voz del Ejército Zapatista de Liberación Nacional, transmitiendo desde las montañas del sureste mexicano.
Seeger, what country comes to mind when you hear this? The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Information is the best way to protect your health. Plan B, an emergency contraceptive, is now available over the counter without a prescription or a doctor's appointment for women 17 years and older. If you have had unprotected sex or have been sexually assaulted, consider Plan B to prevent an unwanted pregnancy. You have a legal right to get Plan B without a doctor's prescription. For more information, call your local Indian Health Service. If your local IHS does not carry Plan B, request that they do. Contact your local tribal health board and let them know about Plan B so they can make sure IHS provides it. For more information, call 605-487-7072. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
The Downing Street memo is relevant. The facts on the ground tell us there were no WMDs in Iraq and no links to 9/11. So, was the president misinformed about these issues? Or was intelligence being fixed to support an invasion? To read the Downing Street memo, or for news and information about it, go to the website afterdowningstreet.org.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And we'll talk about they don't hate anyone and they don't wish to see people maybe being killed. They say those things publicly because it sounds good for the camera. But when the cameras are shut off, members of organized white supremacist groups do sit around plotting to kill people, talk about assassinating people.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back, welcome back. You know, a lot of you know that we also run on what is known as the Thank God It's Friday show. We had the morning slot after Free Speech Radio News on Radio Free Kansas. Well, we finally got him in. Mike Cadell, the producer of Radio Free Kansas. And you can check out his work with his personal blog at fightingcockflyer. That's one word, fightingcockflyer.blogspot.com. And you can check out his comments on Twitter at Posse Call. So, you know, we're going to be talking about the issue of abortion in the free state of Kansas and how that relates to capitalism, greed, Republican hubris, Democratic spinelessness, you know, just total confusion, mass confusion when it comes to, you know, women's rights, when it comes to the rights of minorities, when it comes to, I'm not even going to get into Native issues, man. You know, it's just, right now we're going to talk about what's going on in Kansas in terms of women, in terms of all women. And, you know, Mike, you know, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Finally, got you on the air.
It's an honor and privilege to be on your show, brother.
All right, man. Thank you. And thank you for having us on, you know, your show, which, again, you can find at Blog Talk Radio, Radio Free Kansas, we occupy the morning show on Friday at the Free Speech Radio News, but he has programming and call-in shows all during the week. This is internet radio, progressive internet radio is there, and, you know, we need you to support it. So, you know, after you hear the show today, I would like you guys to go, you know, check it out. He'll give you the direct address to the show over at Blog Talk Radio. And in the meantime, Mike, you know, you had a couple of things you wanted to talk about. So, you know, what's on your mind?
Well, I'd like to, you know, first off, try to describe what has been called the abortion wars in Kansas, Free State Kansas, and try to explain a little bit about why, you know, how it came to be that Dr. George Tiller was murdered in his church, and the dynamics of the state of government and capitalism, how that's all become intertwined within it, and it really isn't. It isn't a it's a confusing mess, but only for people outside. And I think it's by design in certain respects, because people in Kansas and maybe for the rest of the United States are under the misconception that that these clinics are solely for providing abortion. They're and I got a rude education better than 15 years ago when I entered into protecting the clinics. I was a newspaper publisher and editor for 3 years before I was approached to buy a doctor to track down the people who were bothering her. And at that time, I was not a private detective. I ended up becoming one, carrying a gun. In a short period of time, less than 2 or 3 years, I was carrying a gun and people were running around stalking my clients and myself, trying to kill us.
That's a hell of a beginning. You know, I mean, there is a lot to abortion that, or to the, really, I don't even like to use the term abortion. I prefer a woman's right to choose. And, or a family's right to choose, a couple's right to choose. But basically, it comes down to her having a final say, and all say, on what happens to her body, and what sort of medical treatment she's going to receive, and the important issue of privacy. Now, you know, I've written about this, you talk about this, and we can, you know, mention religion, and well, we're going to have to anyway, I suppose, on this subject. But the far right in the United States has used abortion, the medical act itself, or the medical procedure itself, as a rallying call. On a religious level, on the political level, of course, you know, obviously, on you know, ethical, whatever the hell, and they're using extreme methods. Now, you're in Kansas, and you mentioned Dr. Tiller. Now, he was a doctor that was, you know, serving his community. He was serving the women in his community, and I can't remember the name of the nutcase that attacked him. But
Scott Roeder.
But you know. There were folks in the mainstream press, Mike, who were on, you know, all of the major networks, evangelical Christians, far-right Republicans, who were saying that, you know, Dr. Tiller basically brought it upon himself. Isn't that what we were hearing from Fox News?
Well, it's even worse than that. A lot of them were disavowing. A lot of the people in Kansas, at least, like Kansans for Life, that's the name of their group, and Operation Rescue in Wichita, denounced the act as abortion, or excuse me, denounced the act of the murder of Dr. Tiller. They denied it, but at the same time, they all knew Scott Roeder. Scott Roeder's the telephone number to Operation Rescue was on a post-it note on the dash of his car, the car he was apprehended in within hours after killing Dr. Tiller. They all knew Scott Roeder. They knew he shot him. They knew he was going to shoot him. He said in the courtroom, in an open public courtroom, right beside them, in the courtroom, when they tried to railroad Dr. Tiller and they failed. The jury ruled against them, and they got mad, and less than 90 days later, the same guy who was sitting with them in the courtroom in Wichita went into Dr. Tiller's church, cold-bloodedly shot him in the face in his church.
In church?
Yeah, Dr. Tiller was standing as an usher outside. Now, I have to posit this a little bit because I want to let you know I was not protecting Dr. Tiller. I was never hired by Dr. Tiller. He and I had significant disagreements because he wouldn't let me be a dictator over his life. My other clients didn't like me, but they put up with it, and they're all alive. But Dr. Tiller was a Republican, by the way. It was a horrible tragedy. Really, really across, it really sent out a signal across the United States that they'll get you. They dynamited Dr. Tiller's front porch of his clinic in Wichita with dynamite, blew the front off of 1985. And the doctors I worked for and the nurses I worked with, as in a professional basis, were largely, they would refer patients, difficult patients. By that I mean patients who had really serious health problems to Dr. Tiller because he was the most qualified in the state of Kansas to deal with the very difficult pregnancy terminations. We're talking what they call fetal anomalies. That's where the fetus is deformed, has no skull, has no backbone, or have extreme fetal anomalies is what they call them. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I'd rather talk about the capital dynamics of the of abortions and the political and religious opposition that we were faced with in Kansas.
All right, Mike, if you can give me a basic rundown on what the situation is in Kansas right now with choice and the economic corruption that you see behind what's making it not work the way that it should work.
There's a whole series of politicians cascading from as far back as 1991, beginning with the Summer of Mercy, which was the so-called Summer of Mercy, when thousands of people were recruited and busted from Assembly of God, basically Christian dominionist churches throughout the state, spearheaded by I'm trying to remember the guy's name, is Randall Terry. He came into town, into Wichita, and spearheaded a movement among many of the Christian dominionist churches. Now, for your listeners, I don't know if they're familiar with Christian dominionism, but it's basically, this is a Christian country, and you better be white, and we're running the country. It's not only one nation under God, it's one nation under our thumb. And he networked and organized tens of thousands of people to start protests in Wichita. That was 1991, the so-called Summer of Mercy. Now, that was just, for me, that was something I watched on local television. And at that time, I was running newspapers, and that's when I got solicited to get involved in protecting the healthcare professionals around the that were working in other clinics outside of Wichita. And at that time, Governor Joan Finney, a Democrat, Governor Joan Finney, in that summer, came down and spoke in a, I think it was the Wichita State University Shocker Stadium, and came down and sort of come out of the closet, you know what I mean? She came down and spoke before tens of thousands of people that were assembled there to proclaimed that she was quote-unquote pro-life. And here is a woman, here is a Democrat, here is a governor, and she knew where it was going to be safe politically, and she proceeded to denounce women for having wanting reproductive choices in Kansas. I don't think she's ever got drunk and fell off her houseboat on a lake since.
So where do you see things going in terms of the political climate right now?
Well, the political opportunism has not stopped since Governor Joan Finney. There are a significant body of members of the Kansas Democratic Party who recently been either ran out or quit because they were pro-life. They infiltrated the pro-life sect, the so-called pro-life, anti-choice, whatever you want to call them, Christian Dominionists, infiltrated. They already had a bastion, a stronghold, fueled and funded by Charles Koch, the billionaire in Wichita. They'd already had a bastion in the Republican Party, and they proceeded to infiltrate the Kansas Democratic Party and basically took over the state government. Right now, where we're at, brother, is the state of Kansas is now a dictatorship when it comes to reproductive choices for women. It's a dictatorship against choice in the state of Kansas. It's thoroughly established. You cannot even be elected unless your district is enlightened. If you are pro-choice, a huge loss of the state legislature, a super majority in both chambers, the House and the Senate of the state house, are rabidly against women, rabid against women and women's reproductive choice. Even doctors who are a female doctor who is a representative gets up and tries to explain the medical necessity of a safe and legal and clean abortions in the state of Kansas, and she's practically shouted down, and she's a member of their own chamber. It's a dictatorship. It's a patriarchal dictatorship, and it's fueled by extreme capitalists. Charles Koch.
So what's happening on the activist level there?
Well, there's very little. There are lobbyists, and there's a lot of women. They've reopened a clinic on Dr. Tiller's former property. Reopened a clinic there, and that was after 2 or 3 years. Well, it's been since he was killed. And it's on shaky legs. I think the doctors are having to be flown in. There are no Kansas doctors, I think, that are manning that clinic. They have to bring. There might be one, but the one that came forward and volunteered, she was receiving all kinds of anonymous death threats and people outside of her house. And I don't think she went through with it. And I think there is a clinic in Kansas City, Kansas, which I worked at in a protective status, that's still there. And I think it's sort of funny that we paid for the doctors that I was protecting at the time. They had to pay out of their own pockets. The nurses and the doctors had to pay the $2,000 or $3,000 in 1995 to have the security cameras put up. Because the capitalist landlords that run a lot of these clinics, they didn't want to get involved in this. They wanted to, they wanted you to pay more rent for the building because, the insurance rates are going up. Don't tell anybody there's being abortions performed there because our insurance will go up. And if you do that, we'll raise the rent. And you want security cameras? Are you giving me a break? You can't do that. Well, we're not paying for that. So the nurses and doctors had to, out of their own pockets, pay to have the security cameras up. I fought like hell, and I know I'm on your show, so I can use a little profanity or graphic language. But I'll tell you, I fought like hell. I worked my ass off trying to convince these capitalist landlords that it's in their best interest to have good security. And I had to buck a lot of people to initiate. I think it's ironic, and this is sort of sick, but that's what happens when you work in security too long. The security techniques of metal detectors and handheld metal detectors, security cameras, all that was being initiated in the abortion, less than half dozen abortion clinics in Kansas that existed. All those were initiated well before 9/11, Now, they're everywhere. I thought that was horrible, but it's a statement of our country that in a woman's clinic, a woman's reproductive health clinic, we had to initiate security tactics to thwart terrorism even before 911. And when 911 happened, now we're a whole country full of security, crazy ass security. It boggles my mind really to watch that happening.
Yeah, we're going to take a break in a moment, but I want to ask you before we go a brief thought. You just mentioned something I think everyone needs to really be thinking about. How is it that, you know, you had so much violence going on in terms of Eric Rudolph? You know, the Klan never stopped, right? The White Patriot Party never stopped. What was her name? Shonda Ford with the Minutemen, where they went in and shot up that family. You know, this has been going on. And then, you know, they wait till 911, and then all of a sudden, why isn't domestic terrorism, you know, which is usually conservative, which is usually Christian, which is always on you know, the far side of fascism, why is it that they never look at that as terrorism? We have people listening to Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, and they get ideas. They get ideas. Why is that not, you know, listed? Why is that not looked at as acts of the domestic terrorism?
Well, I'll give you a segue for your next bit, our next spot together. I'll tell you quite bluntly. I'm a retired licensed private detective in the state of Kansas, and for over 10 years, I was hired primarily to protect abortion doctors and their health care professionals. Frankly, you know, I liaisoned with law enforcement, and part of that was my duty was to work with to communicate and seek advice from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. And I'm going to give you something right now. This is the first time I have ever said this on air or to anybody in public. The first thing the agent I met with, he's a wonderful guy, actually, he's a nice guy. The first thing he asked me, he said, "So you were with the weatherman, do you know anything about ELF?" And this is in 1992. And I go, "ELF? Elf?" And he goes, "No, the Environmental, the Earth Liberation Front." And I said, "No." And by the way, I was not with the weatherman. I mean, I'll tell you more about what the feds did. They did some good things for me, and they did some bad things. But basically, they just, they were deeply into that. They were already eyeballing who they considered the bad guys in their world at that time. And I was amazed. I thought, wait, that is not weak. Militias going all running rampant. Posse comitatus types all over, or armed paramilitary, extrajudicial, extralegal, outside of the law, running around enforcing liens, even on judges in Kansas, on judges. Armed groups all over the state of Kansas back then in 1991, 92. And this Phoebe, he came up with that, and I was like, "Do you really realize what kind of monster we're dealing with here? You know, I'm trying to tell him, you know, look, this is a lot worse of a situation than some kids burning Winnebagos up in a parking lot. You know, this is not what we're on." And it took me years and years and years to. And in certain respects, I never really got through to them working with them, trying to get them to open up and go after these people. Clinton was president during a lot of this. Many of the FBI agents I knew were bitter men, angry white men, largely. Although I was surprised to find some Catholics and Jews among them. And I watched a metamorphosize. Women were being hired at that time, and they were very proud of that, rightfully so. But I really, it was an eye-opener to see that the anti-communism, the anti-socialism, basically very, very, very conservative people, they felt most comfortable. And this goes for a lot of law enforcement officers out there that are listening, that if you are listening, it does not behoove you to take political sides and or to sound conservative in your thinking and in your practice as a security professional. As a matter of fact, when you lose your open mind, when you lose your ability to criticize, you are crippling yourself, your ability to be an investigator. You have to understand how people think, and part of that is understanding communalism, socialism, and many of the great ideas that have came across our society in the last, 500 years since the Enlightenment and the Reformation. You've got to get beyond that. A lot of law enforcement officers are they pride themselves on being Republican and conservatives, and it's a real mental hang-up that they have within their work. They really, really have to get over that. They hated Bill Clinton, hated him, and I don't really like the guy either. But I mean, even the rumor that Leonard Peltier was going to be might be pardoned by Clinton, they rioted outside, I think, the Supreme Court, and they were proud of it. They got out there, and first time the FBI's ever really demonstrated, and they have a little professional association. They're out there yelling against pardoning Leonard Peltier. If this country goes into a fascist state, most of the cops are going to be very difficult to win the cops over because of that mental framework they're in.
Well,
wasn't
it difficult in Chile? I mean, wasn't it difficult in even South Africa? You know, they didn't really want to give up there. Well, it's not just so much that you have power over people. You also have a certain status when you do law enforcement because you represent the state. You represent the municipality. Yeah. You represent the power structure. And the public has the perception anyway that you're there to protect them when you're really there to protect property. And, any honest law enforcement professional, I think, will agree with that. Okay, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're speaking to Mike Adele, the executive producer of Roger Free Kansas. You can find his work at fightingcockflyer.blogspot.com. We're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Michael, what do you think about ending the Federal Reserve banking system, the private banking system?
I think there's a larger issue. There's a larger issue to deal with.
And the Fed, it's a private bank.
And capitalism, that's the problem. Capitalism has to go.
Capitalism has to go.
This is Intelligence Aboriginal Radio, Angry Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Internet radio for smarter than original.
Hi, this is Randy Rhodes. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held serious bipartisan investigations that did result in articles of impeachment. He resigned before he could be impeached, but strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war, lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court orders, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, tortured, used illegal weapons, and targeted civilians. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio. Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
Nicely paired. Sachin is off the mark.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. And it's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Non-Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
My name is Gordon Hill. I'm from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation in Northwest Coast of so-called British Columbia, Canada, and you're listening to Radio Intelligent Indigenous.
Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're in the studio here, the virtual studio, with Mike Cadell. He's the executive producer of Roger Free Kansas, of which you can find this show, Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, on their Thank God It's Friday morning slot right after Free Speech Radio News. You can check out his work on his blog at fightingcockflyer.blogspot.com, and you can check him out on Twitter at PosseCall. So, we are still talking about Kansas, we're talking about politics, we're talking about the abuses of capitalism. You don't want to scare any Republicans that listen to the show. You know, we're not against capitalism per se. Adam Smith was very clear. There's this hand, right? You talk about the invisible hand all the time in terms of prices going up and down. But he also talked about the vile maxim of mankind that most capitalists never mention, where he said, you know what, this system is good, but it can also be abused and it, you know, really take advantage of people. It can really take advantage, and actually, of entire countries, because greed is always there. And it's like, you know, that's never discussed. And you know, Mike told me something during the break that I found pretty interesting, especially in terms of, you know, the perceptions that we have about college campuses. If you're of a certain age group, that they're just, you know, this mass fields of left wing craziness. And it turns out that in Kansas, for damn sure. And I would say nationwide, but we're talking about Kansas right now. That may not necessarily be the case. We were talking about libertarianism and the campus. And Mike, you had something interesting to say.
Well, a lot of college age youth, even Iraq war veterans, young returning Iraq war veterans I've visited with, just, you know, recently, you know, now. And, they fancy themselves libertarians, but once you begin to talk about the dynamic of Koch libertarianism, K-O-C-H, the billionaire down in Wichita, and how he has seeded and fueled an extreme John Birch type of libertarianism, or you describe the libertarian roots of the Enlightenment in Scotland or in Europe with social democracies, where even the conservatives will not attack universal health care. There are actually conservatives in Europe do not attack universal health care or the idea of it.
Yeah, we need to be very clear here for our stateside listeners that conservatism, republicanism in the United States is not the same thing in Canada. It is not the same thing in Mexico. It is not the same thing in the EU. It is a completely different mindset. It is a completely different tradition. There is no Tory tradition in the United States.
That's right. I heard, brother. I heard that and that on a previous shows of yours, and they're outstanding shows. And you're at your best when you're when you're improvisational. I really enjoy that. But you're right. There are no Tories in the United States. There's nothing like a Tory party. This is more, in my opinion, it's more of a Christian. It's a theocratic organization. The Republicans are more theocratic and dominionist. They're into running a government which is largely determined by a white Christian God. And as an old saying, there's a saying out here in Kansas, you can't be a Kansan unless you're Christian and white. Now that's just upside down from 1852, when the state of Kansas was literally killing people and we're being killed again in order to make this a part of the union of the government against slavery. Kansas was founded against slavery and in blood.
Mr. Cadell, if you would you please go into the history of John Brown? Please.
Very controversial. John Brown, you know, just 20 miles from me. This is tough stuff in a way. I mean, you know, John Brown is labeled a terrorist by some and a freedom fighter by others. There's no doubt that he was religiously motivated. But what really is not known about John Brown is that he formed his own paramilitary group when the state was not a state. It was still a territory. And there was a lot of lawlessness anyhow. And there were successive waves of bounty hunters, slave bounty hunters, right up across the river here from me, less than 25 miles in Atchison, St. Joseph, Missouri, Weston, Missouri, right across the river from Atchison, Kansas. That's in the northeast corner where I'm near. And they would come in gangs, armed gangs, and come down through, literally through where my 10 acres are at. And they would, wave after wave, come down to Lawrence, Kansas. Lawrence, Kansas was founded in the early 1850s by a group of abolitionists called the New England Immigrant Aid Society. And what they were doing were bringing immigrants into Kansas to bring, you know, they were offering free land and they were offering free statehood. They were against slavery. There was no slavery allowed. So consequently, you had immigrants, indentured servants, slaves coming to Kansas, and it was a free man's land, a free people's land. And these armed bands of bounty hunters would cross the Missouri River on rampages, criminal rampages, come through your land, steal your firewood, kill your cattle, and on its way to Lawrence, Kansas, the citadel of free statehood in the state. Of abolition, and they would come down here, and they burnt down Lawrence not just once but twice, and they surrounded it many times, and hunting for free black people, and hunting for they horsewhipped the editor of the newspaper. The newspaper was an abolitionist press. Kansas has Emma Goldman called it, We should stop, Kansas should stop resting on your past glories, you know, and create new ones, because that was our past glory. We came from, we were very free people out here and in the 1850s, so sort of getting off the subject here. But, you know, that's sort of the, you know, the segue into this. Dr. Tiller's father was doing abortions. Abortions were really, you know, women being free in Kansas was a big time-honored tradition when it came to the reproductive choices. That's why Dr. Tiller was one of only three physicians in the United States who performed so-called late-term abortions. And he was thoroughly, he's a Republican. He was part of the quote-unquote establishment here in the state, and he was part of a movement for women to have free reproductive choices. And it's an amazing thing to see our state today. It's totally upside down. You would think we were part of the old South or something now.
All right, Mike, you know, let me ask you something. You know, not too many people know much about Dr. Tiller or what happened to him, which I find to be a bit disturbing, being that this was not in recent, this was not, this is fairly recent memory, and quite a number of people really don't understand what went down. So could you, you know, give the listeners a quick rundown of what happened to that man?
Dr. Tiller was a Republican. He was part of the establishment in the state of Kansas. I mean, he was a lauded figure. His father performed abortions quietly for years at the present location where the current clinic is at in Wichita. And as once Roe v. Wade came in, Dr. Tiller, who was a former Marine, actually, he was a captain in the Marine Corps, I believe it was the Marines, and he came out of the military and he decided he was seeing the victimization of women in Kansas. He saw Roe v. Wade passed by the Supreme Court, and he took over his father's practice and openly started practicing abortions. Well, he became quite proficient at it. I mean, he was very conscientious of the women. Dr. Tiller's slogan was "Trust women," and I find that very useful when talking to almost anybody about the notion of trusting women, because Dr. George Tiller thought about that a long time, and that was sort of his one of his favorite mottos was "You got to trust women with their decisions," and I think that's one of the most challenging things many Kansans, especially white male Christian Kansans, have yet to understand, that you've got to trust women. Tiller was really in many ways walking a barbed wire fence, really. And he was shot two times by shot in both arms by Shelly Shannon, a woman from I believe up northwest Oregon or Washington. She traveled down here and stalked him and shot him as he came out of his clinic. And his clinic was bombed in 1985 with dynamite, blew the front porch off of it. And they stalked him literally day in and day out over the years. And what happened is the state government, these people ran for these so-called right to life people, won positions in the state government after the 1991 Summer of Mercy. And one, usually using religious demagoguery and mixed with politics from the pulpit, and they would win themselves into office, and then they started every year they would pass more and more restrictive laws against abortion or against the clinics or against the doctors. There was always some new gamut of laws that the doctors would have to go through. And over the period of like 10 years, they really succeeded in basically outlawing Dr. Tiller's practice. Well, at one point, an attorney general named Phil Klein came in, and he really was sort of a gangster for life. Pro-life, you know, his gangster against abortion. And the attorney general had a great deal of power, and what he did is he filed criminal charges against Dr. Tiller. And Tiller stood trial in Wichita and was found not guilty by a jury of his peers. And less than 90 days later, he was shot in the face in the foyer of his church in Wichita and killed by a man who was attending that trial named Scott Roeder. Scott Roeder sat in the pews of the courtroom with many of the public organizers of the so-called pro-life movement in Kansas. Scott Roeder sat with them, knew them all, they knew him. Scott Roeder inflamed himself. They inflamed him. He was not a lone wolf. He was part and parcel from the Kansas City, Kansas area to Wichita, which is a good 120, 130 miles. of the pro-life community. It's a very interwoven community in Kansas. And Scott Roeder, after George Tiller was found not guilty, decided he was going to kill him. And he stayed, you know, he was put up. He was largely homeless. Somehow he got a gun and went down and shot. You know, the gun, he even practiced, told people he was going to shoot Tiller with the gun to his brother, David. You know, it wasn't like anyone was getting in his way to kill Dr. Tiller. You know, and the state government, I consider this the government of the state of Kansas largely part of an organized criminal syndicate of the so-called pro-life movement.
Well, that's a big statement. You know, in terms of the power of the Koch brothers, and that's something else I'd like you to get into. Not too many folks know about the connection between the Koch brothers, their father, and the John Birch Society. Which, depending on who you ask, some say is legal wing or the good face, perhaps, of the Ku Klux Klan. That's one way many Africans in this country look at it. That's the way I was raised to look at the John Birch Society and the Concerned Citizens Council and what have you. The Mississippi Sovereignty Commission, you know. You know, it's 2013 and we're still dealing with this. Could you give our listeners a rundown on the relationship between the Koch brothers, their father's support for the John Birch Society and these other nativist groups, and what is and how this affects a woman's right to choose in the state of Kansas?
Well, it's not just a support. Fred Koch, Charles and David Koch's father, made his fortune off of constructing fuel refineries in the Soviet Union during World War II.
Uh-huh.
Made a fortune off that.
Yeah, he got super
rich. And what happened?
No, he became a multimillionaire almost overnight behind that venture. He wasn't the only American to do that either. Armand Hammer was another one.
Right.
These were Americans that were making money, you know, supposedly anti-communist Americans now, who were making money, you know, off of the communist system. They were feeding off of the communist system.
That's right. And he came back to Wichita, and he comes back, and he's he gets all wackadoo because they nationalized the refineries and cut him out in what he thought was an unfair trade deal. A lot of people don't know that they actually offered him royalties. I mean, he's going to get a check every year. It just wasn't big enough for him. And he came back, and he didn't just support. He was a founding member of the John Birch Society. It was out of Appleton, Wisconsin. And it is an extreme, virulent form of anti-communism, and it blossomed into the John Birch Society during the McCarthyist period, what many people call the 50s, the McCarthyism. The extreme Cold War was setting in, and these extremists really were nested and funded and by Fred Koch. Well, this is the household the Charles and David were raised in. The today's billionaires, each of them worth $34 billion. That's the kind of household they were raised in. Extreme anti-communism, extreme anti-collectivism, extreme anti-communalism, anything to do with people getting together, even trade unions. These people saw a communist in every bush. And, that kind of mentality went on and on. And the Koch brothers, Charles and David, moved in New York because the gossip was that he wanted to bang ballerinas and be a playboy, and he is. He's married to a ballerina now, and a big funder of PBS and Nature and Science on your PBS affiliates. But mm-hmm. Charles is the ideologue. Charles is the philosopher king. He's the Ayn Rand, the A-Y-N Rand. He's one that buried himself in the books and writes, makes pronouncements, and he's still in Wichita. And he cunningly, very cleverly, all the way back to Bob Dole, Senator Bob Dole, fueled and funded the pro-life movements, the more extreme paleoconservative movements, and politicized them and gave large sums of money to campaign coffers for many, not just in Kansas, many in Kansas, majority of Kansas legislators who received money from the Koch family, but their cronies too. But now it's turned into like a national infestation where you see Koch money involved in the Cato Institute and stuff. When you approach these young college students down there at the University of Kansas and these university campuses, with this is the real roots of what you're talking, when you call yourself a libertarian, you know, this is what you're talking about. These young people get cross-eyed, confused, angry, usually extremely angry, and it's very difficult to visit with them because they actually interpret that as being anarchism, which I find it. And I said, well, I mean, you know, anarchism is nothing but capitalism. It's just only the strong survivor. You know, prepared to, you know, these are Iraq war veterans and men and women. It's disconcerting. It's not, your campuses are not bastions of free thought. At least in Kansas, there's a lot of Koch influence, K-O-C-H influence, among even the inside the brains of these, well, you know, I got to say it, man. White skin privilege runs on these campuses anymore. You can't get, it's hard to get a university education in Kansas anymore if you're just a working class stiff, no matter your skin color, and you want to work, you're willing to mop floors and sell bologna sandwiches, you could get to college. That's gone in Kansas. It's white skin privilege anymore. That's really disconcerting anymore because I'm from the generation that, you know, people that are smart enough have a right, a fundamental right to education, as long as if they're smart enough to need to go, you know, and there shouldn't be any money involved. But things have really turned it upside down in Kansas. It's no longer the free state that it started out as.
Well, let me ask you this. How many of you, if you and I went down to the campus this, you know, today, this afternoon, and we asked them, well, hey, you know, how many of you even know who John Birch was?
No, there wouldn't be anybody. Maybe one or two out of 100, I would say.
You know, I mean, he was a piece of work. you know, because I think when I did mention him the last time, I was mentioning, you know, when you look at China in terms of the Western attitude, you know, the Orientalism, you know, this colonialist look at what happens over in the East, in that strange East. You have Pearl S. Buck, and then you have John Birch. And you can you can decide which one you want to deal with. You know, one is respectful. The other one says, to hell with that. You will live and think the way we do, or you're a communist. Right? You know?
Right. You're going to be, yeah. Well, you missed the part. You're going to be a Christian.
Well, see, that's the thing. Well, see, with Pearl S. Buck, though, I mean, she was a missionary. But she wasn't an arrogant missionary, though.
No.
You know, I grew up Catholic worker. So, you know, I believe that it's possible for someone to be of faith and to be a good person and be what is supposed to be, you know, the evil socialist thing. I believe that's totally possible. Matter of fact, for those of you who remember the band The House Martins from the UK, they were making the argument. They were making, Christian socialism. They were making that argument at one point in their albums. It's not impossible. So, you know, you would figure that with Kansas being in the Bible Belt, if there was any sort of radicalism, that it would be of a Christian worker, of a Christian socialist sort of radicalism. Why hasn't that developed in Kansas?
Well, in certain respects it has, but it's been suffocated. It's been killed in the cradle, literally, but through the use of Cold War anti-communism. I've met many good sisters and priests of the Catholic faith that are Catholic workers, as you call them, and I have a great respect. Matter of fact, many of them would come to the clinic. Some of the best days, the easiest days I had at watching the perimeter of abortion clinics in Kansas was when the priests and the nuns would show up, because they would at least keep civility going on. They would say the rosary, and that would be about the loudest you'd get. You didn't have these these the hillbilly Christians coming out, screaming at, trying to get the boyfriend to fight with them, screaming at women, "Mommy, mommy, mommy, don't kill me, don't kill me, mommy." I mean, that was just routine going on day in, day out. But when the brothers and sisters would show up out there, you know, they would at least hold them in check and keep their mouth shut, you know, and they were, you know, I got to hand it to them, you know. But a lot of them, even if, you know, they were against war, I would challenge them. And they said, "Well, I'm against war, too." And, you know, you got to have respect for the brothers and sisters that would do that, that would come out. But, they weren't there. They were far and few between those kind of days. Most of the days it was screaming and yelling and trying to block the driveway into the clinic and, you know, stalking the patients, the women, and the trying to engage in antagonistic behavior, verbally insulting people. That was what usually went on in the days. Plus, there was the usual bomb threats and things like that that went on too at the clinics in Kansas. I've dealt with that for years and years, and I'm going to give you a hat tip on that about the Dorothy, what's her name? Dorothy Day or Dorothy? Yeah, Dorothy Day, wasn't it? Catholic worker.
Yeah, Dorothy Day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, as a final question, man, you know, what do you see as the role of Radio Free Kansas in not just keeping progressivism going in Kansas, not just protecting women's right to choose in Kansas, but just in general, you know, where do we go from here? You know, how can Kansas not just get into the national struggle for, you know, a better country, but how can the rest of us help Kansas as activists?
Well, first off, putting your show in rotation was a big deal here in Kansas. Kansas has no community radio stations, not even low-power FM radio stations. The nearest one is a 100,000-watt blowtorch, that's what I call it, KKFI out of Kansas City, Missouri. There are no community radio stations in Kansas, none. Nothing like many of your listeners are familiar with. So I interpreted, based on my newspaper days when I was running newspapers, I published stories about marijuana raids, the police being vicious, organic farming, communes that were still in existence here in Kansas, communes, and what I call the favorable phase of socialism in Kansas. There's actually, you know, the largest socialist weekly newspaper in the history of the United States was published out of Little Girard, Kansas, called The Appeal to Reason, by a guy named J.A. Wayland, who called himself the One Hoss Boss. And at one point, they reached 4.4 million copies of The Appeal to Reason sent out right before World War I to the rest of the nation. It was an inspiration for socialism in the world, if not just the United States. And many people have buried that in this state. And I consider Radio Free Kansas in the vein of the old Appeal to Reason. It's freely available. People can get it, and it's informative, and it offers a perspective on the world that you won't find anywhere else in Kansas. And that's what I look at Radio Free Kansas going to. It was named Radio Free Kansas by a professor of philosophy, Dr. Fred Whitehead. He named it Radio Free Kansas as a joke. We were both sort of laughing about it because he said, "Well, you know, what we need is what the CIA did in Europe with Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Africa or whatever." He said, "We need sort of a left wing version of what the CIA did to the starving natives in whatever country. Freely accessible radio that informs and educates people, but we need it from a left perspective." And he said, "Why don't we call it Radio Free Kansas?" And since then, that's what's been called. We've been operating since 2007. We've done over 1,500 shows and had all kinds of guests. Everybody from Chalmers Johnson to Cindy Sheehan to Michael Parenti to all kinds. We've had a whole gallery of people on live on our show and recorded interviews. And we rotate with Free Speech Radio News proudly. We're the only outlet that broadcasts Free Speech Radio News on a daily basis in Kansas. And we were so happy to have Angry Indian, you, on our Friday lineup. It's just one of the most important. I've actually got a lot of favorable comments from white Christians, male Christians, about your show. They're very happy to hear that. You're really helping people.
Well, that's interesting to hear. You know, we're not isolated. How I live my life and how I think about myself and how I look at the world affects the people around me. So, you know, I'm glad that they can, you know, can get something out of it. Say, hey, let's all just take a moment and think about what the hell is going on. Okay, you've been listening to Mike Cadell, executive producer of Radio Free Kansas. You can find his personal blog at fightingcockflyer.blogspot.com. You can find him on Twitter at PosseCall on Twitter. And you can go to Blog Talk Radio and look for Radio Free Kansas. Put it in the search bar. You'll find it. You know, I mean, it's worth listening to. And he has fresh content every day. You know, you never know what's going to pop up on the show. So, you know, you really need to check it out. And if you can, look, I don't have a credit card. I understand what's going on out here. We all know what's happening out here. But you just heard the man say he is the only resource. He's like my pal, Bob Kincaid, up in Appalachia. He is the only resource in his area. He's on the air. He takes calls. You know, I mean, this, you know, it costs money. I hate to say this, you know, because I don't like money. I don't like anything that has to do with money, but you know, this does cost. And if you can, you know, if you have the means, you know, please help him out and, you know, keep Radio Free Kansas going, especially with Free Speech Radio, because there are too many outlets that are continuing to play Free Speech Radio. You know, it's Democracy Now. Like I said, headonradio.com with Bob Kincaid, Mike Malloy over at MikeMalloy.com. You know, we're all having a hard time staying on the air. So if you like what you heard today, because, you know, he's out here doing what everybody talks about.
You know, if you have it, every one of our shows has always hyperlinks to Free Speech Radio News on the program summaries. On every, you click it, you go there. You know, here's how it works with some of my brothers and sisters. They get $100 extra. Micro-donate to 10, 5, 10, 15 of your favorite outlets for information. And those micro-donations mean a lot at Free Speech Radio News. They mean a lot at my side, too. And it, you know, it, don't think, well, all I got is $10. That is a lot. We know how much how hard it is to donate in today's trying time.
Well, hey, Mike Malloy and his operation over in Georgia, and again, they are isolated in the state of Georgia, mm-hmm. right? You know, they were taking, well, yeah, they're taking micro donations. They've been doing really well with 666. $6.66. So, you know, it's up to you, people. You know, it's up to you. I mean, you can ask yourself if it's worth it to take maybe, you know, that latte, you know, that one latte one day a week, maybe, that you could contribute to a show that you like, that you want to keep running. Because we all know that this next election cycle is going to be a mother.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, there's Fox News and then there's the rest of us. Because the mainstream news isn't saying or doing anything. So, you know, Mike, thanks for being on, man. We're going to have you on again at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know what, brother? Let's talk about the gun culture out here sometime. I'd be happy to talk with you about it. Because I had to carry a gun for 10 years guarding these abortion clinics, these women's healthcare clinics. And I hated that. I hated carrying a gun. I'll be happy to talk about the gun culture someday.
Yeah, but you were working. Brother. You were a professional private investigator. That's different. You were licensed by the state of Kansas.
But I mean, I'm just letting you know, I've learned a lot about the gun culture in society. I'd be happy to talk with you sometime about that. And your listeners, I'll give you some stuff in there on that.
All right, well, okay? We'll definitely mark that down on the calendar. You've been listening to Mike Cadell, executive producer of Radio Free Kansas. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Stay cool, stay easy, and if you want the man to get up off your back, all you've got to do is stand up. Sig it.
You are listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the Fourth World.
Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program.
There they go again. Huh? You like this? This is what I was talking about before the election. I said, let these bastards get elected, and let's see what happens. Well, there you go. There's something else I wanted to share with you here. Where is it? Krugman had this little blog piece about the cult that is destroying America. And, oh, my God, you know, I don't agree with Krugman 99% of the time. I agree with him 100%. I don't think I've ever read anything that Paul Krugman has written that I went, oh, well, no, sorry, Paul. I have decided to divorce Chris Hedges. He and I are no longer married after what he wrote about religious fundamentalists and the equivalence between religious fundamentalists and atheistic fundamentalists. Sorry, Chris. I'll still go to D.C. and participate in the demo in, when's it, Kathy, in October. But I insist on a divorce, separate maintenance. You're on your own now, pal. How dare you? How dare you insinuate, Chris Hedges, that there is equivalence between the Christian crazy bastards, the religious crazy bastards on this planet who are slowly destroying everything, and the atheistic fundamentalists, as you refer to them, who are doing nothing of the sort except begging for rational thought, begging to drop this religious nonsense that's eating the planet alive. Sorry, Chris. I don't like you anymore. Goodbye. Now, with Krugman, I don't have that problem. Krugman says, watching our system deal with the debt ceiling crisis, a wholly self-inflicted crisis, which may nonetheless have disastrous consequences, it's increasingly obvious that what we're looking at is the destructive influence of a cult that has really poisoned our political system. Oh, what's he talking about here? A cult? What? And no, I don't mean the fanaticism of the right. Well, okay, that too. But my feeling about those people is that they are what they are. You might as well denounce wolves for being carnivores. Crazy is what they do. Crazy is what they are. See what I mean? This is Krugman. No, he didn't write this stuff for the New York Times. No. This is on his blog site. No, the cult that I see as reflecting a true moral failure is the cult of balance, of centrism. Here we go. Think about what's happening right now. We have a crisis in which the right is making insane demands, while the president and Democrats in Congress are bending over backward to be accommodating, offering plans that are all spending cuts and no taxes, plans that are far to the right of public opinion. So what do most news reports say? They portray it as a situation in which both sides are equally partisan, equally intransigent, because news reports always do that. And we have influential pundits calling out for a new centrist party, a new centrist president to get us away from the evils of partisanship. The reality, of course, is that we already have a centrist president, actually a moderate conservative president. Once again, health reform, his only major change to government, was modeled on Republican plans. Indeed, plans coming from the Heritage Foundation and everything else. Everything is according to the conservative playbook. Anyway, he says, what all this means is that there is no penalty for extremism. No way for most voters who get their information on the fly rather than doing careful study of the issues to understand what's really going on. You have to ask, what would it take for these news organizations and pundits to actually break with the convention that both sides are equally at fault? This is the clearest, starkest situation one can imagine short of civil war. If this won't do it, nothing will. And yes, I think this is a moral issue. The both sides are at fault. People have to know better. If they refuse to say it, It's out of some combination of fear and ego, of being unwilling to sacrifice their treasured pose of being above the fray. It's a terrible thing to watch, and our nation will pay the price. What Krugman is referring to, obviously, is something that has just been an irritation to me for as long as I can remember. There is not equivalence on both sides of an argument. Every argument. There simply is not. If I say all children at the age of 3 must be decapitated, and you say, no, all children at the age of 3 must not be decapitated, are you going to tell me that our arguments are equivalent? It's just one side, my side, saying off with their heads, and the other side saying, no, leave their heads on. There is equivalence there. No, for those of you who have just been confused terribly by what I just said. And so it goes with this so-called debate that's going on right now. That the right-wingers, the Republicans, the teabaggers, the conservatives, the people who hate this country and are trying to destroy it on the one side of this issue, saying no, no. And the people on the other side saying, look, we've got to find a compromise. Now! And the news media treat this as though it's two sides arguing. How many times have you seen it? How many polls do you have to read? Well, the American public is just sick and tired of this nonsense in Washington. Both sides are at fault. They're all nuts. No, they're not. No, they're not. You have a bad party and a worse party, but they are not equivalent. And the arguments that are being batted back and forth by these halfwits in the Republican Party, which, by the way, is starting to eat its own feet now, you'll notice. Boehner is having to retract all of it. Start all over again. Because the psychotic teabaggers, the ones who are there for sport to bring the country down, the Christian fundamentalists, the freakoids, the ones who say, well, it doesn't say any of this in the Bible, are going to bring the country down. You don't think so? You think they're going to pull out of this by, when's the big day? The 2nd or 3rd of August? When is that, Kathy? Next week? Next Monday? Tuesday? Wednesday? Something like that, huh? Do you think they're going to have a deal between now and then? No, they're not. There's not going to be a deal. Hold on to your ass. Just hold on to it. That's right. Reach around. Okay. Whew. Now grab a hold, because it's a coming, folks. And it's not like the Y2K thing where, remember, where for like, 18 months leading up, and the Beck types had a field day selling people on dehydrated water and all that other kind of stuff, you know, for the apocalypse that was just over the next hill. Here it comes, Y2K, you know, every computer, all of it, from dentists drilling bits all the way up to the supercomputers that run nuclear war. They're all going to crash. It's all over. Oh, my God. Get your money out. Buy gold. Here, buy these beans. And what happened? Well, nothing. Does it sound like I'm undermining my own argument? No, I'm making my own argument. The debt situation is entirely different. But the Y2K thing, this is why you see so many of these absolutely vacant Republicans in the House. Well, nothing's going to happen. Are you getting, like Michelle Bachmann, nothing's going to happen on August 2nd. No, we're not going to reach a deal, but nothing's going to happen. There's plenty of money. There's all kinds of money. It's laying all over the place. Just go outside. There's money under bushes. There's money on the tops of cars. There's money in dumpsters. There's money all over the place. Go get some money. It's okay. Nothing's going to happen. So Krugman and I have been trying to say the same thing for a long time. Equivalence, my ass. There is no equivalence. There is a bad political party, and there's the other one is the one that wants to destroy America. So don't believe the equivalence nonsense, please.
Right now, Whether you're drinking at home in quantity or driving to a local AA meeting because this special is driving you to drink, either way, you're listening
Intelligent
to
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
An early PSA from Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Reservation, where we're gone for our preservation. We were all right. By the seventh cabin.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, to Radio Intelligente Indigena. One of the first 1,000 podcasts available across the internet, and the first indigenous podcast that did not feature fried bread recipes and information on the next powwow, or on-the-air editorials extolling the colonialist virtues of the United States Marine Corps. This is Indigenous Talk Radio. If you are looking for the usual I'm a proud American Indian jive that you get from most of the other Indian podcasts out there in cyberspace, you've definitely come to the wrong place. If you are seeking tutorials on how to learn to become a medicine man and 12 easy steps sort of material, I say again, you have come to the wrong podcast. Radio Intelligente Indígena deals with news and views unlike anything you have heard before. We report that what the mainstream, colonialist, first world news media refuses to acknowledge. We report on the news that affects the fourth world and its peoples. We report on what we need to know to survive intellectually so we may free ourselves physically. But to do that, first we must have the information on our respective colonialist situations and other movements around the world. Radio Intelligente is doing just that. We work to keep the fourth world informed by collecting the underreported news items Aboriginals need to know. I and other independent indigenous activists and journalists do what we can to keep our people knowledgeable about what is happening and how. We want the people informed so that they as communities and individuals can make an informed decision about where we are going and how we are going to get there. And we do it without filtering the information through the warped lens of Eurocentric egotism. This is Radio Intelligente Indígena. This is your radio show.
We feel that this position has so solidified amongst the Indian people here that there's no way that we'll ever change our stance here. We also feel that the federal government will never be able to grasp the fact that it is legally our right to have an independent nation within the boundaries of the USA, and that they will possibly tonight start an armed invasion of our nation. And at that time, you know, we know that they have the armed force strength, they have the might to overwhelm our tiny nation. All the American Indian Movement people here and the Oglala Sioux people that are here defending this nation have decided that we'll never leave and that we'll fight here to the last man. And we feel that it's incumbent upon all the people of this country to rally themselves to the issue of freedom of a people and try to stop their own government from committing another reoccurrence of the 1890 massacre of Indian people. We think that if the support comes with each person supporting us in his own particular way, that our nation will be able to stand strong, and then eventually our people will all over this United States win the freedom that they've been fighting for.